Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
Deine Katze und du, ihr seid ein starkes Team. Und auch deine Allergie ändert daran nichts. Denn wir von Purina bringen euch wieder näher zusammen. Mit Purina Pro Plan Live Clear, der ersten und einzigen Katzennahrung, die nachweislich Allergene reduziert. Hat alles, was deine Katze braucht und neutralisiert die Allergene auf ihren Haaren und Hautschuppen. Schon ab der dritten Fütterungswoche. Purina Pro Plan Live Clear. Jetzt entdecken. Im Tierbedarf und auf shop.purina.de.
This podcast is brought to you by Wise, the app that helps you manage your money internationally. With Wise, you have up to 40 currencies at your fingertips. You can receive money, pay bills, and send money across borders without hidden fees. You always get the real-time mid-market exchange rate. See exactly what you pay every time. Join millions of Wise customers worldwide. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. T's and C's apply.
Hello and welcome to World Business Report here on the BBC World Service. I'm Rahul Tandon. On this edition, we'll continue our look at the state of the US economy, the largest in the world, ahead of those presidential elections next week. And we're talking about the furniture company IKEA and the problems that it and other firms face when looking at supply chains.
There are a number of people in the firing line. This is a very serious issue. Everyone has to watch their supply chains these days. There's a very strong risk of reputational damage.
You can contact us on WhatsApp or send us a voice note, 0044-330-678-3033. We'd love to get your thoughts on the US elections. If you're in one of those swing states, what are the economic challenges that you are facing? But here on World Business Report, we are spending an increasing amount of time talking about protectionism. And in a few hours' time, are we about to move closer to a global trade war? That's because the EU, one of the world's biggest trading blocs, will introduce tariffs on Chinese-built electric vehicles. That'll happen in a few hours' time on Thursday morning. And talks between both sides broke down. That is why we are now in this situation. Professor Klaus Lahrus is a fellow at the Woodrow Wilson Center in Washington, D.C., and a former policy advisor at the German Embassy in Beijing. Professor, thank you so much for joining us here.
You're more than welcome.
There was an attempt, wasn't there, by the EU to have further talks with China to prevent this coming in on Thursday. Those talks have broken down now. We're already seeing an angry response from China. This is going to be a difficult situation, isn't it?
It is a difficult situation. There were 8 rounds of negotiations between the EU Commission and the Chinese Chamber of Commerce, and they have not led to anything. However, the negotiations haven't been finished because they will continue on Friday. You know, these new tariffs will be slapped on tomorrow, Wednesday, but the negotiations will continue on Friday. That means neither side has given up hope that perhaps a compromise solution may still be possible.
Yeah, let's see if that compromise comes out. The problem is that within the EU, not everybody agrees on what to do with China. There are big differences, say, between Germany and France.
Indeed. Five countries were actually against the imposition of tariffs, and that included Germany and also Hungary and Slovakia, for example.
What sort of response do you expect from the Chinese here?
Oh, the Chinese will retaliate, but I'm doubtful whether it will lead to a global trade war. The Chinese have already indicated that they will probably slap tariffs on products such as dairy products or pork or French cognac, and also perhaps, and that is what the Germans fear, on big luxury vehicles being exported from Germany to China. But I don't think that will lead to a global trade war. The Chinese domestic economy is really in dire straits. A lot of people in China are unemployed, particularly young people. Numbers vary from up to 25%, sometimes some say even more. And China needs to export. It needs to export out of the domestic economic crisis. So a global trade war is not actually in China's favor. They will retaliate, but I don't think it will be it will lead to a global trade war.
Stay with us, Professor. I want to bring in Ayoka Yoshioka, Senior Portfolio Manager, Wealth Enhancement Group, who is based in Los Angeles. Ayoka, thanks once again for joining us here on World Business Report. We're talking about the EU and China. Donald Trump has made some pretty strong statements about what he would do in terms of tariffs if he came to power when he's talking about China, hasn't he?
Yes, I think both sides of the political aisle have made some, you know, comments around tariffs, especially, you know, in regards to China exports.
And I think what we're going to see here, irrespective of who comes to power, is an increasing amount of protectionism from the Democrats or the Republicans when it comes to trade, particularly with China.
Yes, I think for both the EU and for the US, you know, we are seeing that, you know, we don't necessarily want to see a flood of EVs just coming from China. We do want to protect both our domestic automakers a little bit as well.
Let us see what happens there. Professor, if I can come back to you, you obviously spent time in Beijing at the German embassy there. There is a lot of debate about how much China is subsidizing its EV sector. What are your thoughts on that? What is the scale of subsidies that we have seen from China that has given them this huge competitive advantage?
Oh, China is clearly subsidizing its EV vehicle industrial base. It is subsidizing many other products as well, and it wants to get a foothold onto the European market. The American and Canadian market are kind of close to EV vehicles. They have imposed 100% tariffs. So the only wealthy market still open to Chinese EV vehicles is really the European market. And they are subsidizing it by means of financial grants, also by providing subsidies for batteries, which is the expensive part of an EV vehicle, and the land is cheap and raw materials is made much cheaper than it would be at market prices. So the Chinese definitely subsidize their vehicles. Probably they are therefore able to offer vehicles at 20% less than European car makers are able to offer EV vehicles on the market to the consumer. And that is quite a significant difference. And the example is, of course, the solar panel industry in the past. You know, European solar panel makers were among the best in the world, and the Chinese made sure that they squeezed them out of the market by offering them solar panels at very competitive prices. And the EU Commission is motivated by that. They want to avoid that EV vehicles made in Europe are being squeezed out by China-made vehicles.
Some people would say, and I'm sure many of our listeners might say this, what is wrong with the country supporting its own industries? Many countries are moving towards stronger industrial policies now, aren't they?
Well, in a way, that is correct. Every side is subsidizing, but perhaps, you know, the Chinese are subsidizing their products much more than anyone else in the world. And the EU Commission is very concerned that in the long run, without the expertise to make EV vehicles, the European car-making industrial base will really disappear, will vanish. And car-making is still very important for many European countries, no more so than in Germany. The German economy relies to a large extent on the car-making industry.
Thank you so much for joining us, Professor, on the program. I'm sure it's an issue that we will talk to you about. Again, Ayoka, the final point on this, if we talk about the impact on economies, if we see big tariffs going up in the US, might protect some US industries, but it will also drive up prices.
That is correct, especially for the consumer who has seen prices go up across the board on many goods and services. It will be an issue.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about the impact of inflation on the US economy and potentially the election in about 10 minutes' time. The homeware company IKEA says it'll contribute to a planned hardship fund for victims of the former communist regime in East Germany, including political prisoners who were forced to make IKEA products. That was all part of their supply chains. It follows negotiations with a victims association and the ombudsman who represents East Germans who were targeted by the dictatorship. Our European regional editor, Danny Eberhard, has been following this story.
Well, it was part of a wider problem. The use of forced labour by prisoners went on from the 1960s to the 1980s in the what was called the German Democratic Republic. There was nothing democratic about it. So tens of thousands of prisoners used to fulfil contracts for Western companies, things like sheets, tablecloths, refrigerators. And many of those people were political prisoners. You could be banged up in East Germany for even for distributing leaflets that were seen as being subversive. So IKEA recognised that some of its supplies in the late 70s and early 80s were used to make things like sofas, chairs, cupboards, that sort of thing. And this doesn't sit very well, obviously, with IKEA's current reputation as a purveyor of flat pack furniture and soft furnishings.
So what could this mean for other companies and IKEA?
One of the victims, the heads of the victims associations, has welcomed this step by IKEA. He said it was groundbreaking and he hopes other companies will follow IKEA's example. There are a number of people in the firing line. This is a very serious issue. Everyone has to watch their supply chains these days. There's a very strong risk of reputational damage and people also need to be looking at things that happened in the past.
Danny Oberhard there, looking at that story. Ayoka, I wonder, supply chains are a complicated issue, aren't they, for many companies, because it's sometimes out of their control, so not easy to monitor all the time.
Oh, absolutely not. And we found out, especially after the pandemic, how difficult it was to manage those supply chains.
We did, didn't we? And I suppose there the question is, do you think, and you're there in LA, do you think many companies are coming under increased pressure from their shareholders to be more vigilant when it comes from those supply chains?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we have seen after 30 years of globalization, a little bit of a reversal. And many companies, I think, are trying to find other areas to diversify their supply chain, as well as kind of bring some of that back either onshore or nearshore.
They are indeed.
Deine Katze und du, ihr seid ein starkes Team. Und auch deine Allergie ändert daran nichts. Denn wir von Purina bringen euch wieder näher zusammen. Mit Purina Pro Plan Live Clear, der ersten und einzigen Katzennahrung, die nachweislich Allergene reduziert. Hat alles, was deine Katze braucht. Und neutralisiert die Allergene auf ihren Haaren und Hautschuppen. Schon ab der dritten Fütterungswoche. Purina Pro Plan Live Clear. Jetzt entdecken. Im Tierbedarf und auf shop.purina.de.
In the face of unprecedented disruption, it's become non-negotiable.
Companies are moving to what they call anti-fragile status.
I'm Chip Kleinexel, host of Resilient Edge, a business vitality podcast paid and presented by Deloitte and produced by BBC Storyworks Commercial Productions. Our third episode is about supply chain resiliency and what it takes for organizations to minimize their risk and improve efficiency. So watch out for episode 3 of Resilient Edge, coming soon wherever you get your podcasts.
Let us now move on. You can contact us, remember, on WhatsApp or send us a voice note, +44 330 678 3033. Love to hear from you in the US about what's going through your mind at the moment regarding the economy and those US elections. You are, of course, with World Business Report from the BBC World Service. Right, it is a big week of results, particularly for the world's biggest tech companies, and they don't get much bigger than Google's parent company, Alphabet. It's seen double-digit growth in its latest earnings report that was published a short while ago. Our tech reporter, Lily Jamali, joins us now, and another indication that these big tech companies are just growing and growing and growing.
That's absolutely right. And I think this quarter and some of the earnings reports that we've seen in the quarters that preceded this last one have a special significance because of the rise of AI. We're trying to figure out how much of that is hype and how much of that is real, is going to meaningfully contribute to, well, the work that all of us do, but also to, you know, whether it's worth investing in these big tech companies. Google, the parent company, I should say Alphabet is the parent company of Google. They have tethered their fortunes in a big way to AI. Mm-hmm. And I think there are questions, of course, always out there about whether AI is going to deliver or mainstream consumers going to run with this technology. But it does seem to be catching on. Despite some mishaps along the way, today we see that AI is really driving demand for cloud services. The company's been offering revenue in that space was up considerably from a year ago. And it seems like businesses are actually buying subscriptions for the company's AI offerings.
Lily, stay with us. Ayoko, because of what the results that we're seeing, does that mean around you a lot more money is flowing into AI at the moment?
You know, we have continued to see, especially the hyperscalers, Alphabet and Microsoft and others, you know, spend on AI. And we continue to see that this quarter. And I don't necessarily think that's going to stop anytime soon.
Lily, when we look at Alphabet in particular, because of Google and because of YouTube, away from AI, it does give us an indication of how that ad market is going as well, which is often a barometer for the economy. How are things going there?
Yeah, this is a huge part. I mean, she just mentioned spending, and she's absolutely right. $13 billion went out the door at Alphabet on capital expenditures. So they're going to be investing in things like data centers and chips and all of that. It's a 62% jump from a year ago in spending. But the digital advertising business continues to do well. You mentioned YouTube. They own that, and that's huge. So between YouTube and search, there, you know, the offerings that Alphabet is putting out to marketers, this is still a primary place that marketers go to advertise. We saw revenue up 15%. So this company is beating analyst expectations, and what we see from the stock market pop in after hours trading shows that investors are pretty pleased.
But challenges ahead for Alphabet, because we know, don't we, that the regulators are talking quite openly about trying to break up the likes of Google.
That's absolutely right. And this has been such a headwind for this company. They are facing multiple antitrust cases, including two that have been brought by the Department of Justice here in the United States. So there's the one having to do with their dominance in online search. They dominate 90% of that market. And then we also have the advertising technology piece of Alphabet, which is also under fire from regulators. And in that first case that I mentioned, just in the last couple of weeks, this is a case playing out in Washington, D.C., in the U.S. District Courts there. There was discussion about remedies. Okay, so they were found guilty of being a monopoly a couple of months ago by this judge, Amit Mehta, there. Now it's, well, what are we going to do about it? And the Department of Justice, in their proposal, floated the possibility of a breakup of this company. That's definitely, I mean, a headwind. I think that's a bit of a euphemism. That could be a real problem for Google going forward. But it's interesting to see this very positive earnings report today. It seems like investors are brushing that off for right now.
They are indeed. Ayoko, that demand revenue of Alphabet when it comes to AI is up 15%. And that's seen the Nasdaq reach record highs once again.
Absolutely. You know, it's nice to see the contribution from Google. We'll see it tomorrow again as well, with the Alphabet stock up 5.5% in the aftermarket.
Okay. Lily, I'm sure that where you are, being a tech reporter, one or two people might be talking about an event taking place next Tuesday. That is the US presidential elections. Do you get a sense within Silicon Valley, is there more support from one candidate than another? We know that Elon Musk has put quite a lot of cash behind Donald Trump.
Yeah, it's been such a fascinating election to watch. I covered tech 9-10 years ago during the 2016 election. And back then, the primary fundraisers that were publicized that we would go and cover were all in favor of the Democratic candidate, Hillary Clinton, at the time. It's been such a turnaround this year, seeing so many major tech leaders, Elon Musk being, you know, foremost among them, supporting Donald Trump. You know, we also see a lot of people in the venture capital world, the people who fund these companies in the early stages, being very vocal about their support for Donald Trump. They don't like the regulatory approach under the Biden administration. I think that's a huge part of this. There has been a transition since Kamala Harris became the nominee for the Democratic Party. We've seen people that avowed, you know, their support for Donald Trump actually come back to the middle a little bit, even say, you know, we're throwing our money at both sides right now. Ben Horowitz is a really good example of that. He's a prominent venture capitalist here. So I think there's mass confusion among some of these people about, you know, what's the image they want to project. I think that after Harris became the main the nominee here, they got a little scared, and a lot of them came back to the middle.
Yep. Let us see what happens there. Not long to go, of course, until those U.S. elections on November the 5th. And both U.S. presidential campaigns are packing their schedules with rallies in different parts of the country. Kamala Harris is in Washington and Donald Trump in Pennsylvania. The poll still showing it's all up for grabs at this point in time. One group that is getting quite a lot of attention this year is the Asian American population. It's one of the fastest growing demographics in the country, though, of course, it's not a homogenous group. It's made up of many, many different groups. They were crucial for President Biden's victory 4 years ago. From Austin, Texas, Andy Euler has been looking more at what issues may be swaying this emerging voting bloc.
On a recent weekday at the University of Texas campus in Austin, a host of student organizations are busy telling passersby who they should vote for and handing out voting guides outside a busy early voting location.
You like a voting guide?
Yep.
Here's a little voting guide.
One of the volunteers out here is a 19-year-old undergraduate student named Manami Krems. She identifies as biracial, half American, half Japanese, and says Kamala Harris's Asian connection means a lot to her.
For me personally, it really does matter the way that she expresses, you know, being both black and Asian without, like, compromise is really inspiring to me.
That's exactly what Joseph Hoshing is thinking, too. He's also biracial, grew up in Mission, Texas, on the Mexico border. He says his house back home is divided, and he says the way his parents, both immigrants, talk about immigration is something to behold.
It's usually my mom telling me that it's like, oh, but these are not the type of people we want coming here.
He says especially among conservative immigrants like his mom, there's a sense of, we immigrated the right way. We deserve to be here. Other immigrants, those seeking asylum, don't. Nirenjan Chenjagiri went through that process a long time ago. He's a retired physician living in Phoenix, Arizona, a swing state in this year's presidential election. He moved to the United States from India in 1973. He says when he became a U.S. citizen in the early 1980s, he registered as a Republican.
I'm probably more of a fiscal conservative in the sense I don't think you throw money at a problem and that solves the problem. And that's the reason I became a Republican. When the January 6th event happened, that's when I said, this party has nothing that represents me.
Chenjagiri officially calls himself an independent. And in a swing state like Arizona, where every vote is going to count, he's exactly the type of voter both parties are hoping to pick up.
Andy Euler there. Now, all this week, we're focusing on those important swing states in America with the U.S. election getting closer and closer. Yesterday, we were in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, probably the most crucial of those swing states because it has the most number of votes in the Electoral College. Tonight on Business Matters, we'll be on the other side of the USA, finding out about how the cost of living has been impacting people's budgets in the state of Nevada, which, of course, is the home of Las Vegas. Some voters have been telling our colleagues at KUNR Public Radio in Northern Nevada that they've fallen on hard times since President Trump left office.
When he was president, my paycheck lasted to groceries, to put gas on my tank, and to save. Right now, forget it. I am living paycheck to paycheck almost to the penny. My mortgage payment just went up again. That's why he has my support. When he was the president, I had very to none worry about how I was going to pay my next bill.
We were averaging like $400 a month in groceries. It's closer to three times that now.
Almost 50% or more probably goes to our rent, which doesn't leave too much for other stuff. Plus, we have health care. We have cable. We have NV Energy. You add up everything and you sometimes just squeak it out. The other big thing is the over-the-counter. The toiletries have become out of control. It doesn't matter where you go. And I'm allergic to scents and shampoo. So the only shampoo I can get is $12 a bottle. You can't really treat yourself. The little luxuries when you're working, when you're on a fixed income, they get less and less.
A lot of our rural communities don't have any access to healthcare whatsoever. The closest emergency room is 120 miles away in Salt Lake City. There is a very good local EMS company that does a very good job at getting folks to Salt Lake City. But, you know, that's also an expense that many families can't afford. You know, in West Wendover, for example, there's high levels of poverty. It's a community where over 60% of the population is Latino. Many folks can't afford to take a day off of work to take their kids into Salt Lake when they get sick, let alone not just taking the day off, but being able to afford that trip to Salt Lake, get sick, and you have to, you know, be able to spend $1,000 just willy-nilly, that's really hard. And we're seeing that in communities across rural Nevada, not just in West Wendover.
I hardly ever go out anymore. I now get to work from home, so that helps in gas. I don't eat a lot because I just can't afford it. I mean, I'm retired, but I do work because I can't afford not to.
More from Nevada coming up on Business Matters. Ayoka, around you, there are many different economic issues, but is it the cost of living, do you think, that is still the most important one in this election?
Absolutely. I think it becomes an issue just that's very personal to voters. And, you know, everybody's struggling a little bit with the higher prices after the pandemic.
Yeah, they are indeed. Now, with this never-ending news feed of short, snappy videos driven by an algorithm powered by artificial intelligence, the social media app TikTok has exploded in popularity in recent years.
The only thing you need to catch a huntsman is a clear container.
My secret to shiny hair.
Game changer.
There have been thousands of UFO sightings in Australia.
How did I not know this?
How did we not know this?
I not know this.
The platform has more than a billion global users, making its parent company, ByteDance, the most valuable startup in the world. And now the company's founder, Zhang Ziming, has an estimated worth of $49 billion. It means he's number one on China's rich list. My colleague Valerie Singleton spoke to the BBC's China media analyst, Kerry Allen.
It's a big story today in China because the richest person is Zhang Ziming. For a number of years, it's been a man called Zhong Shanshan, who's the founder of a beverage company, a bottled water drinks company called Nongfu Spring. But Zhang Ziming has now made the richest, according to the Huron Report, which publishes reports like this every year. Zhang Ziming is the founder of ByteDance, which is the parent company of TikTok. There's a real emphasis today on him being born in the 1980s. You'll often see people who make the list, they're a lot older, very much a self-made billionaire with TikTok. And he has been this big name that's really kind of entered China's media. There used to be a big dominance of Alibaba, Tencent, Baidu, but TikTok has, as we know in recent years, it's become this platform that more or less came from nowhere.
So is it dominated by tech entrepreneurs?
The top 10 definitely is. It's been the case for at least a decade now that there are certain names that you will often see, like Jack Ma, who's the founder of the e-commerce giant Alibaba, and Pony Ma as well, who's the founder of China's big tech company Tencent. So these names are often seen in the top 10. But also, I mentioned a beverage company's chairman being the richest for a long period of time. One of the other big stories today is that the richest woman in China is also the CEO of a water drinks company called Wahaha. So this has been a big story as well, that the richest woman in China is also involved in water.
But China's economy has been struggling. So even though they're immensely rich, has their net worth gone down?
Well, the Huron report that published this data said that there's been a 10% decrease in terms of the money generated by these billionaires overall, the ones on the list. Newspapers say the reason for this is due to a slowing economy and market slides. And there have been problems in China in recent years with a shrinking labour market as a result of the now abolished one-child policy, the fact that the younger demographic is much smaller than the older demographic. A shrinking population as a whole, and there have been problems with China's property sector, meaning that regulations, for example, on companies' debt limits have meant that they've been struggling. But this report says that founders of smartphone companies and semiconductors seem to be doing particularly well. So it's not all across the board. There are some who are really benefiting as a result of changes that have been happening in the last year.
Kerry Allen there on China's richest man. We will be back with Business Matters in a couple of hours' time. We will be focusing on Nevada and those US elections.
Deine Katze und du, ihr seid ein starkes Team. Und auch deine Allergie ändert daran nichts. Denn wir von Purina bringen euch wieder näher zusammen. Mit Purina Pro Plan Live Clear, der ersten und einzigen Katzennahrung, die nachweislich Allergene reduziert. Hat alles, was deine Katze braucht und neutralisiert die Allergene auf ihren Haaren und Hautschuppen. Schon ab der dritten Fütterungswoche. Purina Pro Plan Live Clear. Jetzt entdecken. Im Tierbedarf und auf shop.purina.de.
This podcast is brought to you by Wise, the app that helps you manage your money internationally. With Wise, you have up to 40 currencies at your fingertips. You can receive money, pay bills, and send money across borders without hidden fees. You always get the real-time mid-market exchange rate. See exactly what you pay every time. Join millions of Wise customers worldwide. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. T's and C's apply.